From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right, like peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, the hard knocks life of the stand-up comic. Resisting the temptation to party too hard and twittering in search of a fan base. We sit down with comedians Paul F. Tompkins, Maria Bamford, and Al Madrigal. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by my fellow banterer, John Horn, of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. I had a wonderful time. Netflix hopes it will have a wonderful time. It's made a very striking deal. Its foray into content creation. It is going to not just mail you programs and movies or stream them to you. It is going to create them for you, at least one, a big, expensive series.
No, this is a very bold move by Netflix. They're working with David Fincher, who directed Social Network, Kevin Spacey, who's going to star in the show House of Cards, which is based on a 1990s British miniseries. And it's not just the commitment to the program, it's the level of the commitment. No pilot, which is unusual in the television business, a full 26-episode commitment, apparently, which is a huge order.
Really big, yeah.
And $100 million to produce the show.
This is scary stuff for Hollywood. I mean, as it is, Netflix has kind of appeared on the scene, defied the odds. A lot of people just didn't think the whole thing was going to work. They've been making all kinds of deals with studios, streaming. They've become like the brand name of streaming, while the studios have been trying to figure out what to do.
Right. And the studios at the same time have been using other people's money and have basically become package delivery services. They look for outside investors to fund their slates and they make their money off distribution fees. And Netflix, and I would say to a certain extent, DirecTV, which is doing some television, is saying, if you're not going to make these shows, we'll make them and we'll play the upside.
It is really, you know, Netflix becomes the studios become Netflix. I don't know what's going on, but you have Amazon getting into the streaming business. You have Facebook offering you the chance to stream Dark Knight for $3. Things are changing.
Very fast,
very
I would agree.
Fast. Meanwhile, you had a piece recently about something that Hollywood has been striving to do, which is to break into China, this gigantic potential market, which is very tough right now. And the studios don't want to take any chances. At least MGM doesn't.
Well, it's tough in two ways. The government only allows 20 non-Chinese movies to be exhibited theatrically every year. And they're very unhappy with any movie that depicts them in an unflattering light. MGM, a couple years ago, made a remake of Red Dawn, the Red Scare invasion movie. And in their telling, the Russians and Cubans were replaced by the Chinese and the Russians. And either a copy of the script or the finished film was circulated in China. They made their unhappiness known. And MGM, which is winding down its operations and trying to sell the film, decided the only way they could make this film palatable to an American company, which do a lot of business in China, was to digitally change the Chinese invaders to North Korean. So they use computer effects to remove army logos, flags, and now they're in the process of trying to sell the movie. I'm not sure it's going to work, but it was an unusual and highly unorthodox step they went to.
It's interesting with globalization and the attempt to open these movies worldwide simultaneously, whatever. I don't know who's going to be left. It's going to be only aliens until they actually appear because we won't want to antagonize any particular group.
Just wait. I think the Alien Anti-Defamation League is probably in its formative stages right now.
I fear that it might be. In another deal that, these studios are looking for the money, honey. That's for sure. MGM needs cash, would love to get as much as it can out of China. And our friends at Lionsgate have made a very unusual deal with Groupon to go and see the Matthew McConaughey movie, which just opened, Lincoln Lawyer, for a discount.
Now, Groupon has tens of millions of subscribers, and I think our family is one. I suspect your family is one as well. And Michael Burns, the vice chairman of Lionsgate, said that this deal was to, quote, reach our consumers with targeted, cost-effective, and innovative campaigns, unquote.
I don't know. How is it targeted? We're looking for people who want a deal. But, you know, a lot of times I slam on Groupon. Yes, I am. I'm part of that world. And I've had Groupons in my life. But a lot of times those offers, you kind of think, ooh, that place must need business. And really, honestly, looking at this, I think, well, they obviously aren't expecting long lines to see the Lincoln lawyer.
Lincoln lawyer is no avatar. I think that goes without saying, or it goes with saying with a Groupon deal.
Yeah, so studios finding innovative ways to come up with the cash.
And even with a half-price coupon from Groupon, Lincoln lawyer may still be too expensive for most ticket buyers.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Today we get a window into the sometimes brutal world of stand-up comedy. As many Hollywood veterans know, comedy has always been a tough business. And some, Lenny Bruce, John Belushi, Chris Farley, literally have not survived. The business of comedy has changed as the world has gone digital, but still it's not an easy way to make a living. Just a few years ago, the path to stardom seemed clear. You worked the clubs, honed your skills, landed a gig on one of the big networks, and got your own show, or maybe a movie career. Today, our guests Twitter to find their audience, and while they still hope for a TV gig, they're here to tell you that TV doesn't necessarily launch a career the way it once did. So how do comics remain sane in a business that's always been known for angst and addiction? Today, we sit down with three L.A.-based comics who tell us how they manage their careers and how they handle the pressure. You may know Maria Bamford's voice from any number of cartoons, like Nickelodeon's Kung Fu Panda. And her voice is a big part of her comedy act. Last year, Judd Apatow told the L.A. Times that Bamford is one of the few people that really makes you laugh hard.
I have a hard time if people are really confident in their relationships. You know, we both met and we just both kind of knew. So you guys never fight about anything? He doesn't like onions.
Paul F. Tompkins has worked the clubs, and he caught his first big break as a writer-performer on the HBO series Mr. Show. He's had various other guest spots on TV, and he hosted the VH1 show The Best Week Ever, where he did a weekly roundup of pop culture news.
Well, it's that time of year, American Idol auditions, and we're all excited as a nation for our national freak show.
Al Madrigal is a dad who tries not to spend too much time on the road, but he's still working to build an audience, so he plays clubs around the country. And he's done some TV work, including a role on the now-canceled CBS series Gary Unmarried. Here's a taste of one of his stand-up routines.
I went to go pick up my first day laborer the other day. Has anyone done that? Has anyone? Have you picked up a day laborer? But not for sex. Appropriate reaction.
That was recorded at the Laugh Factory, a Los Angeles club that actually inspired us to spend time today talking about the challenges of being a comic. Last month, the Laugh Factory owner, Jamie Masada, started providing free in-house therapy for comedians who perform at his club. Masada told the LA Times that he's watched too many comics kill themselves with guns or drugs, and he felt he had to act. As one who works at the Laugh Factory, Al Madrigal got the offer for help if he wanted it.
I have the email, actually, because I'm a regular at the Laugh Factory.
Awesome.
They're asking me for avails, and then they're saying, do you want to do the San Manuel Casino? Do you want to do Long Beach on Thursday? And who needs therapy?
No, okay. I thought they seriously sent you an email about this.
No, they did.
They did?
They really did. No, that's
real.
An email.
Okay,
like, and also sign
who
if
needs
you want
therapy?
To sign up for therapy.
Well, what do you think of the idea, though?
I'm not doing it. I'm fine.
I'm fine. Yeah.
It would be great if they did something where you could call in or make an appointment someplace else, because that I think seems a little bit odd. Like, hey, I'm just checking in for spots, and yes, I would like to see Diane.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like,
yeah.
I think
it has to go upstairs.
You, Paul.
I don't know if I would do it at the club. If it was off site, I'd be more likely to do it. I think, though, if it can help somebody, and I can't really see it hurting anyone. Why not? You know, if it
well,
inspires.
It's just a question of whether you guys would do it. I mean, I have to say, one of the worst nights I have as a reporter, I did a piece long ago about Sam Kinison when he was obviously still alive. And part of that was being backstage for a night at the Comedy Store. And it was brutal, mm-hmm. like brutal. Like somebody came off and said, "How did I do?" And the other guy turned to him and said, "You sucked and they hated you." And yeah. there was no smile. Yeah. There was like, it was so tough back
then. Well,
there.
At the Comedy Store, I do that place as well. And it's a very unique, dark.
That's a unique vibe. It's different. Yeah. It's a dark.
Yeah. With comedy, you have a lot of people hanging around. And even on the alternative scene, there's a lot of guys that are underlings to it that are like these self-appointed gatekeepers. And it is this weird vibe that's going on where people think they should be on stage ahead of you.
Yeah.
And then there's the people that aren't even comics that are just hanging out. I mean, if I wanted to go to one of these clubs and get a hooker and a handgun, I could do that in the same, probably during
that's
the day.
It's a heartwarming
day.
Story.
It would be two conversations.
You'd
be,
yeah, you're two you degrees okay. of separation yeah, away yeah, from yeah. a hooker and a handgun yeah. at any moment.
Well, so seriously, folks, why? Let's start with Maria. We're stipulating that comics are crazy. Mm. Crazier than most? Crazier than regular talent, right? Mm. Crazier than dramatic people?
I think there's just... Mm.
I don't know about that.
In music and in theater, you're also surrounded by a crowd. So comics, your individuals, you're on stage and there's only one of you. So there's more likely that whatever your idiosyncrasies are going to come out a lot more than if you're in a band. It's like, oh, he's having an off day, the drummer, but nobody notices it. But if the comic's having an off day,
it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul?
I think that anybody who wants to get in front of people for a living, like they have a desire to be seen by a bunch of people, there's issues there. And I think, say, if we're going to make a distinction between actors and comedians, that actors probably their issues are more emotional and they're demonstrated more emotional. They act out in a more emotional way. I think comedians tend to be maybe more disturbed. And there's people that – is that fair to say? I mean, like the actors that I have known have been crazy in sort of a similar way. And the comics that I've known that have been crazy, it's always kind of creepy to me.
What do you think, yeah. Al?
It's free booze everywhere I go.
Yeah.
And to the point where I'm saying, if I go back at the Comedy Store, there's a guy, bartender named Huck, that's been there forever, and he looks at me before I walk in and goes, "Crown Royal, Al." And I had to tell him recently, it's like, no more Crown Royal for Al. And,
I'm Al, by the way.
And I say, we're going to do, I have bitters and soda. I think it's a good fake drink for me a lot of the time.
Yeah,
and
you feel like you have to look like you're having a drink, too.
Well, sort of. And I also go, oh, it's a bad gut. And then people right away, they give you a break on that one. Because I could just imagine also sitting around the group of peers at the Laugh Factory and then, like Paul said, walking away to go to do therapy, the business that you would get for that.
Oh. Yeah.
What about you, Maria?
And it's self-medicating, too. Like, I think a lot of time, like, okay, you've just done this show. It's very, physical, exciting experience. And then you're talking to these people afterwards who kind of know you but don't know you and are sort of, hopefully, if the show goes well, are admiring. But there's a real disconnect, I think, after
sort of
a show.
Alienating.
And then you kind of feel like to kind of calm down after the show. I can totally see having, a beer or five Twinkies to just relax.
You guys are all, I assume, drawing on your own lives and your own inner comedy. A lot of comedy, it's cliche, comes from pain. Mm-hmm. And so you're by yourselves, you're on that stage, and it's your stuff. So maybe that's part of it, too?
I would think so. I mean, I think that when you're talking about the desire for attention, I think what's in there is the desire for validation. And it doesn't mean you had to have a horrible childhood in order to want some attention that maybe you didn't feel was enough when you were a kid. But the drawing from within you, I think, is a big part of that. It's I don't know. Like, I like to act, but that's not – I couldn't just do that. I would always have to do stand-up.
Sure.
I can't imagine not doing stand-up.
Always, as much as I complain about it, I love doing stand-up, and I'll always go back to stand-up, and I'll always – I mean, you see somebody like Paul Reiser who has success with Mad About You and then never does stand-up again.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
I could never
– Well, but I understand because I get stage fright, now like at the beginning of every week, on the Thursday night or the Wednesday night, it starts a week, I'm like, oh, I can't do this. This is an any good.
Is it in a new place or is it any place?
No, any place. Even if it's a place I've been there to before.
Oh, wow.
And then by Friday, I'm like, I'm pretty good at this. This is pretty fun.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the business of being a stand-up comic with Maria Bamford, Al Madrigal, and Paul F. Tompkins. In today's multi-platform world, there are new ways to build audiences, as Tompkins explains.
I think you can build a bigger audience now on the web than you can on television.
Sure.
I
mean, yeah, for sure.
Because there's the days of the three networks is over, and it used to be Johnny Carson was the only thing that was on
right.
at 11:30 with a chair and a desk, you know.
Right.
And now it's like and apparently the ratings show that people you lose viewers. That's why the comedian and the bands are on at the end of those shows, is because people tune out. Like, a lot of times they don't even want to give it a chance. Like, is this going to be something I like? Probably not. And right. so they turn the TV off. So
I've been on for a couple of years ago, I was on two network TV shows back to back that weren't very – I mean, in terms of viewing numbers compared to cable, amazing.
Which shows?
I was on a show called Welcome to the Captain with Jeffrey Tambor and Raquel Welch that lasted for 5 episodes during the writer's strike. It was just horrible timing. And then right after that, I was on a show for a year called Gary Unmarried, and that was another CBS show. And I was on that, I believe, 19 episodes. And still, if I did a voice on Archer. Probably sell out more.
Why am I blanking on what
Archer is? Archer is an FX show that probably – in terms of numbers, has how many million? Maybe 1 million viewers.
Maybe, yeah.
And that is more significant than
in terms of
a
hip comedy audience. Yes,
and those are people who are using social media a lot, who are being Twittered to, and when I went out to North Carolina for this opening for a gun and dog show.
This is literally true. Ladies and gentlemen, literally true. I assume this is literally true.
It's literally true. And it was like a month ago. And so half of it were gun and dog show people. But then there was a very strong contingent, about 50 people who drove for 3 to 4 hours just because of Twitter.
Wow.
To come see me. People. And they were like, yeah. And they thought it was hilarious that I was saying things that were probably inappropriate for the crowd.
So is it easier? In a way, because you can go out there and find people who would never have been
able
to.
You still have to go out and find them, though.
Well,
you know
I'm
what I mean? And they have to find
easy.
You. You know, it is.
Sure, but once
they found process.
You, it's like any small business. I think it's the same thing. Say you want to start a plumbing supply business, or you're a hooker. Either way, it's like letting people know that you exist.
Right.
But it's tough. And then you have all the stuff that goes into stand-up now, which is you need to be on Twitter. You need to be on Facebook. You need to have a marketing major.
What about you, Paul?
It's an all-day, all-week job with social media and, you know, all that kind of promoting. And, you know, it's a constant scheduling puzzle. And it does get overwhelming. And I get resentful sometimes of, you know, feeling – it gets to be a feeling of – I don't feel like I'm necessarily in control of my life at this point. Like, I feel like I have all these obligations now.
And because it is unpredictable. I mean, you don't know when the work will stop, or there is that fear. So it's like, oh, just take it
sure.
all. Take it all now. And the, no one will tell you that's enough. There's no manager who's going to say, hey, why don't you take a couple days off?
And what, Paul, you have a thing that you do.
Oh, well, I started booking my shows through social networks. It kind of came about by accident. This guy wrote to me via Twitter saying, why don't you come do a show in Toronto? And I said, well, why don't you get a bunch of people who say they will definitely see me in Toronto, and then I will book a show in Toronto. So he started this group on Facebook called I Want to See Paul F. Tompkins in Toronto. He said, Paul has said if we get 300 people to say they will see a show, that he'll book a show here.
They don't actually have to buy a ticket.
They don't have to buy a ticket. It's like you have – but he laid it out. He said, you have to be serious about doing this. Don't just join the group because you think you're helping me out, or because it's easy to join groups. Like, and within a couple weeks, he got 300 people. And I said, all right. I'm as good as my word. And I booked a show. And it was great. And then
and
after
300
that,
people turn up?
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought, well, there's got to be a way to do this other places. And so I put a blog on my website. And I said, if you want to see me in your town, I'm going to try booking my shows this way.
This is a very strange awesome. Level of interacting
no, and,
with your
you know,
public.
Doug, yeah. Doug Stanhope does the same thing where he will go and uses
brown paper tickets
and go and sort of he'll just go anywhere. It's where you eliminate the comedy club from the process and you just show up and go directly to the people.
Coming up after a short break, comics negotiating the wild world of the TV pilot season. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today, we're talking with three LA-based comedians, Maria Bamford, Al Madrigal, and Paul F. Tompkins, about the challenges of working in comedy. Paul and Maria have been in the business for some 20 years each, and they've both branched out into TV gigs. Tompkins was on the HBO comedy Mr. Show and the VH1 pop culture roundup Best Week Ever. Most of Maria's television work has been doing voiceovers for animated shows, like the PBS show Word Girl. And for the last 2 years, she's done Target's holiday ad campaign.
Before you head out to two-day frenzy, it's always a good idea to make a list. And you need to check that list more thoroughly than Santa. Because does Santa shop for gifts? No! He makes them. He's Santa. Ooh, Reginald. Naughty? No. Nice? Yes. But perfect.
Our third guest, Al Madrigal, has been working the comedy club scene while waiting for his big TV break, which would help him build a following and spare him from life on the road. He's landed roles on a couple of shows that didn't last long enough to help him make his name, but he has hardly given up.
I had a deal with ABC this year. I still am. I'm in a deal until June to develop my. I went in and I pitched a show and I sold a show with Warren Littlefield. Went in with him.
Former NBC executive.
Yes. And it was very exciting. So everybody, me and the writers and the Littlefield company, we go in there and we sold the thing. And ABC Studios was attached to it. And then it didn't get moved forward. But now I'm in a unique spot. If I do get a pilot and I have a couple auditions tomorrow, I have to give back some of the money from the ABC deal.
Wow.
So if I really want to be in this pilot, I mean, and also
you
if they'll
have me. You
have
to give back the money to be in somebody else's pilot.
Yes, for another network. If I'm not sure what the situation
and
is.
And that's
for,
iffy too.
Yeah.
So you've got the money in hand for without a show or
without
the show.
No without show.
The gamble never ends. It never ends. I'm gonna deal now. Yeah. I'm writing something for Comedy Central. And it's just a script at this point as a vehicle for myself. And a friend and I are writing it together. And the timing of it is such that I would only be able to audition for other things in what they call second position. So this show knows this. You know, if I go into for something for
so if they pull
Fox,
you in, the other deal is off.
Yeah. Well, the idea is like, you know, I'm in first position to Comedy Central. So if I go into Fox, they know like, oh, his first commitment is to Comedy Central. So then they can see me. But then, of course, if it goes further than that, which has happened to me, you know, I go to the next level with that audition. They say, we want you to test for the network, but only if you'll agree to be in first position. So then I have to decide, well, is this worth throwing over this other deal, you know, or
do
postponing?
Do I kill the Comedy Central idea?
Yeah. Even
because
though that
I
is
might
a thing,
get this.
Yeah, that's my creation. Right. That's a thing that's for me to just be an actor for hire on this. So it's like it's always like like trying to strategize and figure these things out.
Sure.
It never ends.
Just blindfold yourself and throw
Welcome
a dart.
On Welcome to the Captain, that show I did, I was in a deal at that point with Fox to develop a show that didn't go forward. And I had to give back a lot of money to be in Welcome to the Captain, hoping that it was going to get on air, which it did. So it was a gamble that sort of paid off.
Yeah.
But and I just want to be in that thing that gets
you
the secret
steady.
So
thing, yeah.
I would love you know the steady work and steady laughs that go along with it, and
especially
so you
as
get
you're cashing the paycheck.
On, yeah,
laughing,
exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, when the checks would come from the sitcom, honestly, and they get delivered to the house, me and my wife literally would hug and jump up and down.
Yes. Who has not been there?
No,
and Maria, for
no,
you, that was
so
it. Was
so nice. So we were so happy.
I think people have been there, but your thing was a Target ad?
Yeah, I decided to stop auditioning like about 3 years ago when I realized I hadn't booked anything for 10 years.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, Maria.
That's not true.
You know,
10
it
years?
Took 10 years.
What was the last thing you booked before that?
I think it was a state lottery commercial in, I mean, I think it was 96 or 97.
What was Lucky Numbers?
That was 99.
Mm.
But
I remember
still,
seeing you guest star and stuff, and that was just offer only. I
think, yeah, only offer only. Yeah.
Mm. Offer wow. only meaning they're calling you specifically.
Yeah, you don't have to audition because I felt like I can't go to another place and not get a free bottle of water.
Yeah.
I just want, that's all I want, that or a button.
So you got
say.
The Target gig because?
I don't know exactly, but I know the ad agency is in Portland, which has, you know, a lot of Twitter-friendly artsy types. I did a web series, about 20 episodes, and I wonder if it was from that because that was something is something that's been passed to people. And so I think it was that, although they did first offered to Amy Sedaris, I heard. That was
so,
a great
you know, it's
break,
really
yeah.
kind of the blessing and the curse that you have no idea whether you, if you do some webisode of something, suddenly it turns into a Target commercial, and or, you know, you just don't know what's going to...
I think there, which is, this is the unfairness thing. I think it's just whatever hype or thing that you've got going on. Then somebody goes, hey, there's this really funny something I saw there. It's not going through the thousands of voices. Like you'll, one agency will send over 100 different voices. It's like, everybody's great. You know, mm-hmm. the only thing that's different is somebody going, I like the way she talked about her mother. It was funny. yeah. You know, like
you can do it all by the book and it won't help you at all. Paul, you had a close brush, right? With which, or perhaps you could have sunk one of television's most, what has turned out to be one of television's most popular. But looking at the bright side,
way to put it.
Perhaps it could have been, you were in contention to be.
For the role that Steve Carell played in The Office, I got down to the final stages. Yeah. What's so funny is, you know, you see when you get that close on a job, on a network job to be the lead of a show. You see the same people at the auditions again and again as it's narrowed down, you know, as you go through the
it's
steps.
It's like American Idol.
Yeah. I did not see Steve Carell at any of those auditions. So it is very possible, as happens with a lot of these things, that he might have been a guy that was in contention for it, but they have to work out the deal, you know.
Right.
And I've done a few auditions where I realized they're going to stick somebody else in this, and this is all just a backup. You know, they right. have to have auditions because they can't not have auditions because what if this guy that they're that they want for it says, oh, I want $1 million, you
right.
know?
Right.
So then they have to have somebody that's ready to go.
So then you get your stomach hurting and you dress up really nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And this was a show that I loved. Yeah. You know, I loved The British Office, and this is very sure. exciting that, you know, this is going to happen. And I really took it really, really seriously. And I feel like I did a really good job, and everybody there was very nice to me. And to not get it was disappointing, but I had been doing this long enough that it was not devastating. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know what? I got to a point where, which you have to get to as an actor, which is every audition is a gamble. There's no guarantees. You only have to be able to walk away from it saying, I did the best job that I could. That's all you can do. Sometimes that will be your only comfort.
That's
not
all there is.
The
Yeah.
It's like, most of the time.
Yeah. Right? But what's funny to me about it is, so I got that far with that audition. In all the years The Office has been on, I've never been called in for any other part ever again. So almost good enough to be the lead of the show, not good enough to be on one episode.
Oh, my God.
Gary the coffee guy.
You know, Steve Carell.
Exactly.
Steve Carell is leaving.
I know. My name has not been bandied about.
Paul F. Tompkins, Al Madrigal, and Maria Bamford are stand-up comics, actors, and writers. To find out where they'll be performing next, go to our webpage, kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you'll find links to each of their websites. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, thank you.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Special thanks today to Mark Marin and Belisa Balaban for helping us set up today's interviews. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. You can also hear us on your phone with our iPhone and Android apps. And of course, you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. And check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/kcrwthebusiness, where we've got a conversation going on about, what else, show business. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.